Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is a congressional candidate. We neither endorse nor oppose specific candidates. His name is Billy Prempa, and let me just read this short little quote here. While the Democrat Party has traditionally been the party that African Americans and minorities as a whole have called home, a new wave of black conservatives have challenged that narrative and are looking to flip the black vote next November. Air Force veteran and congressional candidate Billy Prempa is challenging the norms of black voting and daring people who have not traditionally voted red to rethink their years of voting for failure. All right, so we're going to talk right now with Billy. Billy, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, brother.
All right. First of all, you're running in the state of New Jersey. Tell us about who you are and why you've decided to run.
So my name is Billy Prempa. I'm 31 years old, about to be 32 next week. So congratulations to me.
Yeah.
But I'm a United States Air Force veteran, and I decided to get involved in politics a little bit after one of my mentors, Dr. Castile, started speaking with me. He said, hey, listen, man, you're a first-generation American. You're an Air Force veteran. You already fought for this country. I'm already an old man. You're still very, very young. And at the end of the day, you're going to have to fight for this country. You're going to have to deal with all of the repercussions that not just this current administration, but the Congress people that are in office right now. You have to deal with all the stuff that they're putting forward. And I was like, you being a young man, it's your responsible. It's your duty. It's your civic duty to get involved in politics. And the truth is, where I'm from, Paterson, New Jersey, it's an inner city. It's rife with a lot of crime, a lot of corruption within the higher levels of society in the city. And I never thought of myself as someone that would be involved in politics ever in my life. But at the end of the day, he was right. He was absolutely correct. Like, if I don't say anything, if I don't do anything, then I'm kind of jacked up. We've got the highest violence ever in the 9th District. We've got more crime than there's ever been. And there seems to be no checks and balances. My opponent is an 86-year-old politician who's been in office for 26 years in Congress, but he's got collectively 50-plus years of political experience. He became a millionaire as a politician.
Wow.
He's absolutely the definition of the poster boy for term limits. And I want to bring different things to the table. I want to actually give our children, and not just our children, but our young adults, an opportunity to survive. Like, I want to give them more opportunities in work by creating educational programs inside of our schools, for example, where our kids can learn from business owners how to do what they do, rather than going to school, getting out, going to college, and then being saddled with thousands and thousands of dollars of debt, if not millions of dollars of debt collectively.
Yeah, and a lot of those education, the educational things that people learn are not that great. I mean, it used to be something. It used to be that college was worth it. Nowadays, I don't know. I mean, many, obviously in the engineering department or, let's say, pre-medical school or
yes,
medical school and so forth, there's something of value there, accounting. That's not true, though, with a lot of what is happening in education today. So I tell you what, how about if we look at maybe three or four real big issues, and let's begin with education. What are your thoughts about education? And if you were in Congress, what would you do to try and improve education? What do you think of this critical race theory or the LGBT agenda trying to be, you know, rammed down our throats? Are parents who object to these things domestic terrorists as some?
No, absolutely not. They're definitely not domestic terrorists at all. I mean, like, they have very, very rational reasons for believing what they believe and going against these kinds of things, because what critical race theory does at the end of the day is it trains our students and it trains our children how to be victims. It doesn't train them to actually, to be, you know, productive people in society. It trains us to believe that white people are the cause of all of our problems, when in reality, at the end of the day, there's so much more to it than that. You know, and on top of that, inside of our schools, we're not preparing our children to be the best of the best. It's like the only solution that they're telling you is go to college and go and get saddled with debt. And that's about it. That's not what we want. Like, I want to see our school systems become like career superhighways, where you go into school, you come out, and you have an actual career that can teach you. So like what you were mentioning before about the trades and these programs, I would love to see professionals who've been involved in IT, engineering, plumbing, the financial market especially, inside of our high schools, teaching our children a little bit of what they know, give these business owners a tax incentive to do so, and while they're able to teach us, while they're able to teach our children how to do what they do, it's an incentive for them. It's win-win for everybody. The students win, the parents win, the business owners win, the city wins, the state wins, and more importantly, America wins. Because we have a huge wage gap. I mean, we have a huge jobs gap and a skills gap where our country is importing people from Japan, India, Indonesia, all these different countries to fill up jobs that Americans should totally be doing. Why are we not preparing our children to do this? Because when you don't have these opportunities, you have situations like Paterson, New Jersey, where everybody's out here killing each other, unfortunately, selling drugs and doing things to put money on the table for their families, but they've got no skills. So I think the best way that we can resolve that is by bringing those jobs to our students before any of these situations actually happen.
Now, you have a video out there where you're basically saying we refuse to be your guinea pigs. And I guess this is related to the vaccine mandate. Comment on that, if you would.
Yes. So this is a video that I put out not too long ago. It's called From Slaves to Guinea Pigs. And the video basically outlines why a large number of the African-American community, why they're reluctant to take the vaccine. And they're reluctant to take it for a very good reason. The video goes out and it details several atrocities that were done by the United States government against the African-American community, especially when it comes to health. They'll say that, hey, this is for your good health, this is to help you, but at the end of the day, we've been lied to, we've been manipulated. So when it comes to this vaccine, this is an emergency use experimental vaccine. I'm not against taking it. I mean, I'm not against people taking it, I should say. If people want to take it, they can go ahead and take it. But there's good reason why a lot of people don't want to take it. We have no idea what's in there. There's not been any long-term studies. We have no idea what's going to happen to you 10, 15, maybe 20 years down the line. This is a vaccine that binds to your DNA and exchanges to your DNA so they can actually fight this virus. And it's just too risky for a lot of us. Yeah. And I understand that. I totally understand that. The fact that the government is forcing people to take this, they're also going to lose their job. They're going to lose their livelihood. You're not going to be able to put on the table because they want you to take this medical procedure. I not only think that it's irrational, but I believe that there may be some nefarious purposes behind it. The only people who benefit from this vaccine at the end of the day, in my opinion, are the pharmaceutical companies and the companies that manufacture them. If anything happens to you, you can't sue these manufacturers. You can't sue them at all. And there's lots of people that I know personally that have permanent neurological damage. Some of them have died. And there's many other very horrible things that could happen from it. We still don't know what the effects are. And seeing the people that I know that are now gone or that are now dealing with permanent damage, I have every right to be skeptical, especially considering the track record that the United States government has with black people and telling them to take these vaccines. In New York City, 78% of African Americans in New York between the ages of 18 and 44 have not taken this vaccine. So if you haven't taken it, you can't go into most of these businesses. Most of these businesses are requiring you to show the vaccine passport and show proof that you've been vaccinated before they allow you to sit down and have a burger, for example. You know, and to me, I think that's irrational and that's ridiculous. It's not a business owner's place, nor is it the governor's or even the United States government's place to tell you what you can can't do with your body. Because at the end of the day, they'll tell you, you know, my body, my choice when it comes to abortion. But when it comes to you making your personal decisions for health, they'll say that you can't do it. And I totally disagree with that.
Wow. All right. Let's go to another issue. Safety in the streets. What do you think about the defund the police type push?
I think it's probably the most irrational logic ever when it comes to saying defund the police. Because at the end of the day, I've heard a lot of these arguments. In my city, Paterson, they have a Black Lives Matter chapter, and even them, they painted Black Lives Matter in front of the police department. You know, these people are racist, we got to get rid of them. But at the end of the day, what defunding the police really does is we get the situation we have in Paterson, for example. We have a 72% increase in crime from the previous year. So from 2020 up until now, 72% increase in crime. We're down 170 police officers. At the end of the day, you're not going to be able to get a mental health counselor to go and talk down a guy that's wielding two machetes butt naked in the middle of the street trying to chop people up. It just doesn't work that way. You know, it's like there's a reason why we have our police. There's a reason why we need them. But what I will say is this. I understand if there's misconduct within the police department, but we need to hold our police to a much higher standard. Defunding them, getting rid of them just doesn't work. We see politicians inside of Washington, D.C. that are calling for this. They're calling for the defunding of police, but at the same time, they've got an entire security detail. They've got police detail in the Capitol. They've got all these luxuries, but they don't want the common person, the average person, especially in the inner cities, to be able to protect themselves because they want more chaos. They want more violence. They want more death so that they have something to complain about and get reelected and get more votes. I don't want that. My opponent, 86-year-old white guy who claims to be from Patterson, but he has a home in Patterson, but he's never in that home. He's never in that home ever, you know? But this guy is the one who claims that Black Lives Matter. He supports black people. He cares about black people. But he's done literally absolutely nothing for us. In fact, he wants to defund the police, and he wants to divert funds from them. There's not a single police officer that I've met in the 9th District that supports Bill Pascrell. Not a single one. Because throughout his entire tenure, he's turned his back on our police. He's helped them. He's helped the police become weaker than they are right now. And he supports it because he wants to still stay relevant. And he wants to appease the young and far left radical element that may not even understand fully the things that they're asking for. But it sounds good on paper to say get rid of police. It sounds really good on paper, but at the end of the day, it's not going to benefit anybody. It benefits his pockets for sure, though.
Hmm. What would be your proposal to try and curb crime? And by the way, we have about 3 minutes left, maybe 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. My proposal is, for one, increase the funding to our police. Don't defund our police. Increase the funding to them. Increase the training for our police officers, as well as incentivize extracurricular training for our police officers. If they wanted to learn psychology, de-escalation tactics, learning a new language to be able to speak with other people inside of the community, I believe police officers should be incentivized for this. We need to have the best, the baddest, and the greatest police force in the United States. The only way we're going to do that is by incentivizing good behavior with our officers. So that's what I believe needs to be done, and I believe that's just going to keep our community safer, because defunding it, I've already seen what it's like when it's defunded. I've seen what our police forces are like when we have a fully staffed police department, but I want to see that and take it to the next level and give police officers a reason to want to be officers rather than going to another state or going to another city because of the way that our politicians treat them. I want to treat our police officers right because they deserve it. I mean, they're doing a job that's very dangerous, especially in a place like Patterson, or even in the 4th Ward of Patterson where I live. It's extremely dangerous. So I only want the best of the best that are going in there to handle these kinds of situations.
All right, we have about 1 minute left. What are your thoughts about capitalism versus socialism? And I bring this up because the current Congress is, you know, pushing us off a cliff towards more and more socialism.
So here's what I'll say, because I know we only got 1 minute. Capitalism 100% is the winner. Like it stood the test of time, and it was capitalism that brought America to where it is right now. And America is one of the youngest countries out of all of them so far. And it's set a landmark to the point where people from socialist countries want to come to America because they know what America is capable of. This is a beautiful nation. It's the only system that can bring people out of poverty. Socialism just wants to drain your pockets, but it always sounds good on paper. The truth is, the socialists don't have anything that they can bring to the table, so they'd rather take from people that they consider to be rich and give it to everybody else and think that's equality, but it's not. In reality, the equality of opportunity always is going to supersede the equality of outcome. And equality of opportunity is what socialism is what capitalism allows us to do. So, brother, I want to say thank you so much for having me on air. For the people that are listening right now, if you want to learn more about the campaign, you can go to my website, billyprempeh.com. That's BILLYPREM for Mary, PEH.com.
Okay, Billy Prempeh. Thank you so much for being with us, and all the best to you, sir.
Thank you so much, brother.
God bless you. Too. Thanks. Bye-bye.